You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Play in Alberta, everything stays in Alberta. Revenues from Play Alberta stay in the province. Can help get the Hen Day built. Shocker, no surprise Draisaitl didn't skate today. Maybe a little bit with Kane and Nugent Hopkins, but I just sense that definitely Nugent Hopkins and Kane are playing. And I think Leon Draisaitl, after listening to Strud's description of a high ankle sprain, I think we'll see Leon Draisaitl on game night and no other time.
Yep. And by the way, I'm on Highway 2 heading to Calgary, and I'm kind of in that part where there's a lot of peaks and valleys. So if my signal comes and goes, I'm going down a hill right now. I did hear that Ken Holland on a station down the dial said today that all three players would be in the lineup for game number one. I think Speck tweeted that. So that'll be good news for the Oilers. It's just a matter of how healthy they are, and Draisaitl in particular. Like, what percentage would you put him at from game seven? What do you think his percentage was at? He looked like maybe 70, 75 to me.
Yeah, when the game started, definitely. Now, just so you know, if you were really dedicated to the show, because you're not on a timeline, you could just pull over so you wouldn't be in a dip and valley. But nonetheless, I would say that when I look at Draisaitl, yeah, I kind of guessed 80%. He definitely looked like he was laboring and maybe tentative early in the game. But then by the end of the game, you know, it looked like either, you know, it got numb or he just gotten used to it. But, you know, he was more effective. There was two plays in the defensive zone where Draisaitl had to race to pucks to get it out, and both times he won the race. And I was like, you know what? There's just a determination factor from him. And so it didn't look like on two kind of key plays that I noticed in the third, it wasn't bothering him. It was at least, well, it didn't look like it because he got to the puck.
You know what I noticed in his game? Draisaitl is a brilliant player using his feet, right? And we know he's got the love of soccer. But a lot of times when he's protecting the puck, he will tap it back to his feet, or he'll overskate it like with his stick and then use his feet. He definitely was limited in his ability to maneuver the puck around his feet when it came to his puck protection methods. And Zach, it actually was noticeable. It's a pretty big part of his game when it's not there. You know, you just think about him battling against players, leaning back, welcoming the contact, being able to nudge it back up to his stick, working his feet along the boards. Definitely a little bit diminished there. But I thought it was a great performance from him, considering how it was clear to all of us how much pain he was in. But for them to have all three will be good for them. Based on practice today, it looked to me like I'm still not sure if he's playing center or the wing. Because based on where the placeholders were, I think it could have been either.
I think he would start on the wing. For a variety of reasons. You go 11-7, you have him and McDavid and Yamamoto, and him and McDavid played, you know, out of Draisaitl's 18 minutes at 5-on-5, he played 16 and a half with McDavid, so they played obviously a lot together. You look at, you know, then McDavid every, you know, few shifts, he double shifts with Kane and Hyman. You know, and then, you know, so that lowers some of Ryan McLeod's minutes. And I think that the coach, because I looked at it, Shogger, at Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Josh Archibald, and Derek Ryan are the guys getting – Josh Archibald's had 28% of his static shifts in the defensive zone. Derek Ryan is 31. Nugent-Hopkins is 33, right? Like, and then you look at the other three centers, McLeod 61, Draisaitl 64, McDavid is 78, right, like in the offensive zone. So, yeah, so it's kind of obvious the role that they've given Nugent-Hopkins in that first round, and they feel he can take the faceoffs on the left, Derek Ryan can take the faceoffs on the right, and they go from there. So I don't know if I see that really changing that much. You could put Draisaitl at center, then you got to move somebody up to play with McDavid, right? I guess they just put Kane back up there, and you know you do that. But yeah. I don't know, I kind of get the sense that he'll go with McLeod with Kane and Hyman and Nugent Hopkins on his line, and then rotate in Puljujarvi and Cassian.
I think you're right. I mean, I think you just have to see how Draisaitl is doing. I do think that the winning formula is more likely those guys on separate lines. I think the long-term winning formula is that, Gregs. But I think to start, you know, it's what helped them win that series. You know, I think there's a certain amount of overwhelming the opposition that can happen. And I think it'll be Hanifin and Anderson will be the D pairing that Calgary looks to use on home ice. I think they had a lot of success against McDavid specifically this year. That pairing had really good numbers against Connor McDavid this year. And so, a little bit harder to stack both guys together. It just lets Calgary have that matchup. But I think you have to be confident and let your best players in the world play through that D matchup.
Oh, yeah. I think when you look at the matchup, and you're right, the regular season, it worked well for them, but man, McDavid, just how he played in the first round is just a different level, right? And, if Evander Kane is there and then you throw in Draisaitl, I think the other thing that 11 does, Shogger, is it changes because Kane and Hyman play very different than Draisaitl and Yamamoto. So you put McDavid with two different sets of guys for certain times, it changes how you attack.
It's a different look for sure. Kane and Hyman have that grinding style. I mean, Yamamoto in a lot of ways too, but those guys it's a different style of game, The one thing I wonder about, the Calgary Flames are coming out of a series where they were playing against a goaltender that was so good, they knew they were going to have to generate a crap ton of shot attempts and opportunities just to play the percentages to get something to go past them. So just the sheer volume of things that were going at the net, the Oilers are going to have to really defend well because Calgary's in that headspace where they're attacking like en masse. And I just wonder if there won't be this barrage that the Oilers face in the early going because that's the mode Calgary's in. And Ottinger was otherworldly. And if there isn't, like the thing we know about Calgary, they're a better starting team than the Oilers. They scored first. Significantly more, and a lot of shot volume, a lot of, So it'll just be interesting to see if there's an early barrage the Oilers have to fend off and withstand, because that's the way Calgary's been rolling.
Ryan Schalk from TSN joins us. You look at, the Flames, they had Shillington and Tanev on the ice today, so I would expect they're going to play. It'd be odd if they suddenly weren't practicing or were practicing the day before and then not playing. So, just like Leon Draisaitl, I think the Edmonton Oilers are going to have to test the Flames, that pairing, just to see how they feel, and specifically Shillington. It was anybody who watched the play, Shogger, it's clear it's an injury to his shoulder right now. Bad, who knows? So, Cassian, Archibald, Kane, anybody, of course, but the more physical wingers, the good news is, to me, it's well within the rules to target a guy's shoulder because that's where you hit 90% of the time, right? Trying to go after Draisaitl's ankle, you might have to do something a little bit cheap. Not saying they won't, but it's a little bit more unnatural where if you just finish your check on a guy's shoulder, like that just looks like a normal play.
You got to wear them down. There's no question. Like, Shillington's a player that you can put pressure on physically, right? You can put – he's a nice skating defenseman, and he's evasive. But the other thing is that Markstrom plays the puck really well. Like, he's similar to Smith in that he can get out a lot. He can play the puck a lot. I remember when I was pulling some numbers earlier this year on Smith, in terms of volume of times he comes out of the net, Markstrom was second in a lot of the categories behind Smith in terms of how often he was playing pucks. So, the Oilers are going to have to be selective about their dump-ins because they're playing against a goalie that handles the puck well. Do the same thing that you did against L.A. Cross-corner dumps where you get in and get physical. To your point, they need to pound on those defensemen every opportunity they get. Josh Archibald was a heat-seeking missile. He needs to stay that way. Zach Cassian, same thing. And then it's Ryan McLeod, and it's really, everybody needs to be doing their share, finishing checks, especially against a team that the blue line has softened up with some injuries. There is no excuse for any order forwards to swing away from any opportunities to lay the body on the forecheck. Everybody's got to do it, but we know who the ones are who are truly going to be able to do the damage.
Ryan Schalk from TSN joins us. Schalker, switching gears a little bit. How concerned are you? What do you make of the CFL strike that's ongoing right now?
Yeah. It's discouraging. It's the last thing they needed. Finally, it's setting up to have some normalcy and some momentum. For the Elks specifically, this is difficult because they've been working really hard on creating a better setup and scenario for themselves with the fans. I'm not going to pretend to be fully briefed on all the ins and outs and the granular details of it. I'm kind of looking at it from a 500-foot view while I'm focused on hockey here. This is not ideal, and I think it's It's ill-advised from both sides to allow this to happen, and it sucks because there was the opportunity to gain more momentum and more traction after a couple of years of tough go, and so I think it's really, really crappy. What's your read?
Yeah, it's not great at all. I believe the powers that be on the CFL side do not have a grasp or a real sense of how their league is viewed right now.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to nickel and dime players over things that I think at times are unnecessary. And why, like, to me, this should have your CBA end on May 1st. So you don't have this garbage. Cause what the league did here is they tried to strong arm the players and say, ha ha, they're all flying in. Now we're going to, you know, we're just going to play hardball because they would never strike. Well, the Players Association for the first time ever, you know, has the ability to fly guys back home. Right. So they're not just stuck around doing anything if it goes too long. Right. And I think the CFL is just hoping all they're trying to do here is bully them in the hopes that they cave. And, the Players Association's in a better position. I really still think though, I talk to people, this is a negotiation that could be easily done in 2 hours. And that's what's so frustrating about it. And the thing is, every passing day is a day where some fans are like, meh.
Yeah.
And the more meh you have, the less interest you have when the season begins.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, you know, this province, they're going to be preoccupied here for a little while. But it's such a good opportunity right now to, you know, people are out there in a way that they weren't a year and certainly 2 years ago. People are, you know, wanting to be out and about and wanting to re-engage, right? Re-engage in the world around them in a lot of ways. You know, more people are getting out there and it's just such a good opportunity. So for the Elks organization, I mean, how much work have they been doing to try and create a smooth runway for Elks fans to just come sprinting back to their beloved team? They've been doing everything they can. And so for this to happen, and this is just one organization, right? Every organization has its unique situation. But for the Elks, this is really, really badly timed. And I, you know, I'm CFL players to me, you know, there's a small percentage of them that make the upper echelon dollar that really, really significantly moves the dial. And so, you know, if the battle is for the everyday man, you know, I think, you know, that's what the union, you know, that's what it's for. And to make life better for the everyday guy that comes and goes and isn't necessarily at the high end. And I think, you know, just wanting to be treated fair and just not wanting to be nickeled and dimed and wanting a fair shake, it's just unfortunate that it has to happen in this timeline. I think you make a great point. Why have the CBA expiring at a time where you put this at risk? Well, you say, well, because then, you know, it creates this pressure point. Well, great. So you create a pressure point. You had a stare down. Nobody blinked. And now what? Like, way to go. I credit the NHL, man, because far from peaceful labor negotiations over the years, but my goodness, when things were tough and when the league was facing peril, I've never seen teamwork like that between the PA and the NHL to come up with just, you know, extend the CBA, figure out how to get through COVID, try and sort out how the revenues were going to work. I thought that both sides did a very responsible job for the good of the sport. And I guess I just wonder where that conversation is in this moment for the CFL and you know, the opportunity in front of the league right now.
And lastly, Shogger, did I hear correctly that how come you and Tom didn't carpool? What happened there?
Gazzola and I?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's why I missed 6 calls from him today and I didn't return any. Maybe that's, maybe that had to do with it. I just, I got busy and I didn't have time to return his call. So if you're on the highway listening to this, Tom, sorry, bud. I need to put his contact number in my phone here finally after 15 years.
Yeah. You're like, oh, I don't know this number.
Screen.
Nice.
I couldn't imagine 3 hours in the car with Gazzola. I couldn't.
Oh,
our
you guys
would be different.
But your hair products. Imagine that you guys would just talk about hair products for like an hour and a half.
No. He's on a different level than I am. His hair products wouldn't work with me.
Well, Shocker, have a good time in Calgary. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yep. See you down there, pal.